Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin Ault from Digital Finance Analytics, where I'll let us post covering finance and property news. Well, it's Monday evening again, and Edwin is back, and Edwin is back from a slightly different location. Hello, Edwin. How are you going?
I'm doing well, Martin. I'm down sort of your part of the world, in a way, the Kangaroo Valley, the old stomping ground.
Absolutely.
So in the resort and the conference, as a matter of fact, I'll talk more about that next week. But today we're going to talk about political predictions. What's going to happen with the market? And based on the stuff that we've been sharing, I think it looks like the ABC is catching up to the real numbers out there, and how it's really putting the fire underneath some of the buyers, or a bit of a FOMO underneath some of the buyers. I mean, notwithstanding the effect of the talks of bringing forward the 5% deposits with the support from the government in order for people to slit their throats. I mean, to slit their wrists. I mean, to buy first
buy property. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You know, the national home prices values climbed according to Cortality, old CoreLogic. The increase was driven by the housing end rather than units. Housing markets rose 0.9% in Sydney, 0.4% in Melbourne, 1.2% in Brisbane, and 1.1% in Perth. Interesting. Values of units and apartments varied widely across the capitals, but over the past year, units have been flat in Sydney and they've been down by 1.2% in Melbourne, but they rose in Brisbane. And it's interesting, the little sort of kicker at the end here was, despite the reduction in the quarter, home buyers are still being squeezed, total repayments are gobbling up large amounts of people's money. And of course, if you look at the clearance rates, this is the stuff from Domain over the weekend, which claimed high clearance rates. But as you know, and I know, this is based on reported auctions rather than the number listed. So it's a bit off. But then you have the article from Sarah here, who says auctions across the nation's picked up ahead of the first week of spring. More than 2,200 homes going under the hammer, largest number since the start of June. Auction activity is set to reduce a little next week, said Tim Lawless from Cotality. And there's also an expectation of an influx of buyers ahead of the federal government's first home guarantee scheme, which starts October 1. And as this article also sort of reinforced from Lucy, housing prices expected to jump after several months of modest growth as buyers rush into the spring market ahead of the federal government's move to bring forward its 5% first home buyer guarantee. Oh, and postscript, credit was up again, investor credit up particularly. So, you know, everyone's talking the market up, Edwin.
Look, they are. And the unfortunate thing is that a lot of people are jumping into the wrong, into the wrong type of properties. It's all panic, it's all FOMO. That's all that's created. I've seen it on the inspection days, how people are going. The reports from agents and with my own eyes, how you see, you'd see two or three groups on weeks prior when you're sort of looking at a home for a client, and then when you go back with the client to have a second look at it, there's last week we saw eight groups of people in the one home, whereas 2 weeks prior to that you only see one or two stragglers. But it's the old saying, Martin, it's a rising tide lifts all boats. So when you've got that fire and that FOMO in that lower volume, lower priced volume bandwidth, where the government's supposed to help the first time buyers, but they just set a fire on there. Two things are going to happen. We're going to end up with very, very few homes, freestanding homes under the 1 million by the end of the year. And the other thing is, of course, is those properties or those areas or that where those properties are at, across a lot of capital cities except Melbourne, you're going to see them jump, and they're going to jump anywhere from 5 to 10% in some cases. Now, 5 to 10% in that bandwidth is, anything from 50,000, 70,000 to 80,000, $100,000, literally overnight. And that's what we are seeing. We are seeing, having those bidding wars, and this is what fuels that is those stupid, ad hoc, on the run, policies, announcements, that they've just thrown at it. Let me say this, Martin, that obviously the intent of the government, both state and federal, is to get people into the dog boxes. But most of the people that are buying, wanting to get into the market, they don't want to get into a dog box unless it's an older established three-story walk-up, or a worst case scenario, four-level, five-level, six-level apartment complex that was built in the late 90s, early 2000s, where they know what they're getting. But the whole point of this whole exercise and trying to get them into, housing, is to push them into the high-rise development, because they've got big players wanting to break soil, wanting to break ground, and those big players are big institutions, big corporations that are going to. It's not going to mean that people are going to get them any cheaper later on down the track, and it's not going to mean that they're going to get the rentals are going to be any cheaper. It's going to be all controlled, and it's going to it's going to have the opposite effect. But right now, where we are right now, it's interesting seeing the those price points in the lower bandwidths of the freestanding homes. I mean, like we've been watching over the months how little freestanding homes are available in the Sydney region. And when you start talking in reality, in the hundreds, in the mid, around 400 or 500 freestanding homes for sale in the Sydney region. That is dreadful, and that is alarming. I mean, driving down to Kangaroo Valley, you go through a lot of the new subdivisions in the southwest region, and you see $1.2, $1.5 million homes at Oran Park, sitting on 350, 360 square meters of land, and they've all got the black roofs and the black, and they're just building blocks all the way down, as far as the eye can see. It's just incredible what people are doing, what people are buying, and this is where we are. But unfortunately, Martin, as I've been saying for a while, the system isn't broken, and things are going to get worse before they truly break, and change happens. And with what we're going to be talking about and what we're going to be sharing later on in the rant, our followers and our viewers are going to be our first cab off the rank to understand, the changes that are coming up, because of the different groups that we talk to, the different groups that feed us the information, and what we are seeing from a global scale, as opposed to just what's happening, what the property reporters and the commentators are just focusing on the local scene. But there's a lot more pain to come. That's the unfortunate message. But you can prepare, and you can be more prepared, and you should be more prepared, because not everything out there is hunky dory. And what's being shoved down the throats of these young people that are wanting to get into the market, it's B grade, C grade properties that need a lot of work, apart from the fact that they're paying top dollar for them.
Absolutely. And again, in my one-to-one conversations, I'm having the same problem, where people are realizing just that the barrel is being scraped in many regards to find anything. Just on dwelling approvals, it's interesting to note that the data that came out today showed that the dwelling approvals dropped a little bit. You can see there that they're still well below the housing accord target that will be required to meet the 29 target. So we're not building enough. And if you look at the mix of property types, you can see here that the units and houses are sort of trucking along. It's units, of course, that are all over the place in terms of volatility. And I think that's fascinating when you think about, of course, all of the discussions amongst the politicians, state and federal. Like, for example, Mims is talking about, he's going to take on the NIMBYs. We got to reverse the culture of no. He says that constrained residential development across Sydney, acknowledging a generational shift in attitudes towards housing, has not stamped out stiff opposition to density in established suburbs, in other words, building up, we've got to resist the assumption that NIMBYism is dead and buried, or that it's lying dormant, because it's ready to lurch up again. And it's interesting that the Housing Delivery Authority has recommended 215 proposals comprising 79,000 dwellings to be fast-tracked approvals. And that's basically trying to knock off the local council's decisioning, etc., etc. And then, of course, the response from the councils. The councils are fighting over housing density. Sydney councils are fighting for control of their housing density, developing alternative approaches that they unanimously reject state government imposed zoning changes. Well. And it's fascinating. Scully, New South Wales housing minister, said the governments will work with councils who put forward sensible and deliverable housing plans, but the important work of councils is continuing to improve their assessment timeframes. Some are trialling AI and a few special cases. I've mandated expert planners, he said. And, the bottom line is Mossman, NIMBYism, some of these other expensive areas, NIMBYism. And, of course, we discussed last week the Woollahra situation, which is fascinating. And here is a whole bunch of articles on Woollahra. Sydney needs more housing. Yes, even in Woollahra, wrote the state political editor here. It's simply not enough units in Sydney and beyond to meet demand. Well, I've got the question that you got. Well, do people really want to live in these high-rise dog boxes, even if it's in Woollahra or Edgecliff? And the Teals gave the Woollahra plan a tentative green light. And interestingly, another article coming to say, well, the populations are actually plunging in some of these NIMBY suburbs. Communities across Sydney are pushing back hard against plans to build more homes and increase population densities, are suffering some of the biggest drops in resident numbers since the start of the pandemic. You've got to say there's a whole bunch of stuff going on here, which is partly disinformation. The true point, and it comes right back to what you said and to my one-to-one conversations, there are a lot of people, a lot of young buyers who really, really, really don't want to buy units in high rise. And that is the thing that the politicians have actually got to understand, and they don't understand at the moment.
100%, Martin. But even if when you look back at the Woollahra scenario, we said that by the time that they're going to be sold off the plan, by the time that that the zoning changes, by the time that they get the DAs, they amalgamate the lands and negotiate with the landowners in order to for the developers to negotiate a price. By the time all that happens, and when you start adding the construction costs and all the all the controls that have to be put in place in order to build the 10,000 so-called homes, units that they're proposing around there. I mean, look, any one of those on average is going to be worth $2.3 million. How many first-time buyers have got $2.3 million, stashed underneath the mattress, ready to go out and buy, albeit in Woollahra? But not only that, but you've also got the other, you've got infrastructure issues. Construction is absolutely going to be diabolical. Then, in that period, in those 5, 6, 7 years of construction, those areas are just going to be a no-go zone. The infrastructure there, the shops are just going to die die. It's going to be a long, painful death because of and the congestion is just going to be absolutely horrendous. But there's no talks about how all that infrastructure is going to be supporting another 30,000 residents across 10,000 new dwellings. So that's one of the aspects, apart from cost, is the infrastructure. And secondly, I'd love to see the geotech reports. Mm. I would really love to see the geotech reports to see what the hell they're going to be building on. A lot of those old commercial sites, there's a lot of people aren't aware of it, but there's a lot of contamination in those. There's a lot of fly ash in a lot of those areas in a lot of those old industrial sites. They used to use fly ash as a base in order to build on. So, but now it's a contaminant. So getting rid of all the contaminants around that land, around those areas is going to be interesting as well, because obviously you're going to be going down two or three basements. And to think 10,000 apartments is it's not a small task. So we go back to great ideas, good ideas, but as we've said before, and as I've said for a while now, it's going to be let's see who has the biggest QC or SC on their side, because regardless of how much money the government's got, I can tell you what, a lot of the people that are there are going to be finding it tooth and nail. So my best case scenario is 10 years before any project comes off. Before people get the key, and we go back at what price, right? At what price is the big question. Added to that is going to be the all these projects that they're talking about bringing on board in Sydney. Do we have the manpower? Do we have the facilities, and do we have the crews in order to in order to develop? It's not easy to come off from three basements and then go up another 40, 50, 60 levels. It's a big ask, and you've got to have specialist crews, especially in these areas. So I, as I said, Martin, unfortunately, they're trying to redevelop the wrong areas, in my view, and people the and they're going to be unaffordable for the first time buyers anyway, based on the affordability scale in the loans they can get. So who are they really trying to appease? Who are they really trying to, I think in a lot of these cases is we're going to get a very small fraction of finished stock. Even when we reach the 10-year mark, so it's going to be interesting. Moving forward, though, I mean, based on what we, based on all the political banter that's been going around, Martin, you begin to think. I mean, there's all these announceables with the 10,000 new dwellings here, 15,000 there, and all this and all that, and all this fanfare. But at the end of the day, it's going to be interesting to see who takes the helm at the next election, and what they do with all this announceables. So this is where I'm going to bring in my political prediction. I'm going to be a little bit political. So my political prediction is one that I believe, and people can bookmark this rant. I believe that the Labor Party is going to come back into power in a state level as well as federal, regardless of what's around, regardless of the noise around the immigration policies that we currently have. Because I think the biggest noise that is going to influence voters is going to be the noise around capital gains tax. The discounts on capital gains tax on CGT, and also the benefits that they have by way of negative gearing, investors have by way of negative gearing, and how they're being supported. I think that's going to be that those that are going to be supporting or wanting a change in that is going to build a bigger voting block. And because the policies around immigration is a bit of a hot potato, I believe that even part of the conservative voting bloc and in the older groups, that you're going to have people are going to migrate over to the to the Labor Party side of things, they're going to be pushing the so pushing and I say so-called pushing the negative gearing. And also the concessions to CGT, and because they're going to feel that that's a better option for their kids. So I feel that that the mothers of the conservative older voting bloc are going to vote Labor, because they're going to think that they're going to that the Labor government's going to bring in the new changes to to negative gearing and CGT, and that's going to be built, and that's going to basically bolster the position that the Labor Party have, which is, unfortunately, at the end of the day, we know that it's a one party system, but in terms of differentiating. So then the question for me is, how's the landscape going to be in 3 years' time, in 4 years' time? You and I know, and our viewers and our followers know, that anything to do with negative gearing and CGT, that is going, if even if Labor do anything about it, there's going to be a lot of, are we going to do, we're going to do it to win the favour with the voters. But I really don't believe that that things are going to change. Why? Because the political the political industry own just as much investment properties as the real estate industry do in on a one-to-one basis. So it's I think a lot of it's just going to be there's going to be a lot of banter. And then now going back to what we were talking earlier on, and that is the announceables, whether we're going to build 10,000 here, we're going to build 75,000 here, we're going to bring this forward, we're going to bring that forward to build. Again, we're only going to get delivery of a very small fraction of what's being promised. And why? Because of the cost of construction. And in the graph that you brought in earlier on, you said there's less, there's less movement by way of developers builders to really build, because why? Because of the cost, because of the infrastructure costs, and because of the what's all the red tape that's involved in building anything new. So now we go back to Martin, we go back to the premise that some of the politicians have been talking about that are in power at the moment, the ministers for housing, talking about putting a pause to the NCC. I mean, that is just a further grenade thrown into the store, where you're storing all your ammunition. It's crazy what these politicians are trying to come up with to seemingly want to solve a problem. The question is the problem really going to get solved, and when will start to see anything positive happen, as opposed to just hearing what they're going to do, and we're going to start this and we're going to start that. I mean, talking about it isn't getting isn't putting shovel to the ground.
Well, it's interesting. What problem are you actually trying to solve? I think this diagram here might give us a little bit of a clue. This is actually showing the number of properties that different MPs have, right? And so you can see there that Ben Small, who actually won the federal seat of Forest at the May election, is at the top of the list. Tony Burke with six. So the people in power are actually heavy property owners. So sometimes I wonder whether what they're actually thinking is, their own interests rather than our interests. So that's the first data point in terms of trying to figure out what's really going on. And I've had the view for some time that there is a words and figures differ conversation going on here, right? There's a lot of talk, a lot of announceables. We talk about this quite often, right? And when you actually sort of stand back and think about it, what you actually begin to realize is that maybe, just maybe, what they want us to believe they think isn't necessarily what they really believe or think. And I think there is this gap between the two. The reality is the question. And I think to an extent, Edwin, it explains a little bit, over the weekend there were these marches in several different places around Australia. And there were a lot of different themes and variations, but one of the ones that came through very strongly in the reporting was housing, migration, cost of living, all of those things, which of course are very significant political impacts on real people. And to my mind, you know, there are a lot of people who are saying, this is not right. This isn't working for us. Australia isn't a place that actually is a comfortable place to be part of now. It's hard to get a house. Costs are still very expensive, et cetera, et cetera. And to my mind, you know, you can look at this sort of article that says, well, you know, it's getting more expensive. Sydney's prices are continuing to surge amid lower deposits. And this sort of article that says, well, the property ladder's missing some rungs. And interestingly, this article suggests that millennials' property assets perhaps rose the most amongst the different cohorts. So there's a lot of people writing a lot of rubbish about this. But the truth is that we've got this massive gap between reality and expectation. We've got a lot of people struggling to try and actually figure out how to make the next move against the backcloth, of course, of higher prices. You know, the electricity bills are still running through the roof and inflation jumped more than expected. I made a show on that the other day, and I made the point that inflation is not dead. It's just resting at best and actually may well be rising a little bit higher. And that's going to put pressure on the Reserve Bank and their ability to be able to actually cut the rates as much as people wanted or expected. You know, it's fascinating that people are now saying that, well, there's still maybe a wiggle room for a September rate cut. I have my doubts about that. Possibly, you know, how far and how fast. But we're not going to see a lot of rate cuts ahead, I don't think. And if you look at what's happening internationally, of course, there's also significant pressures there. Christopher Joy recently wrote, interest rates unlikely to fall much further. And I think he's absolutely right on that. And if you look at what's happening in the US and what the Federal Reserve over there is worrying about. So, you know, like it or not, we're in a very uncomfortable position. But my point is, at the end of the day, politicians are about announceables. They want to be seen to be doing things. They want to effectively show that they really care when maybe they really don't. And I think people are seeing through that. And certainly those you know, weekend events, to my mind, underscores the story that we've got to ask some serious questions. And if you want to ask serious questions, if you want to take it to that next level, this announcement, right, which relates to India in talks to construct 1 million houses worth $500 billion in Australia, according to the Economic Times. This is essentially, India is in deep negotiations to create 1 million homes in Australia and has reached out to the UAE for financing the project. What on earth is going on here?
This is and this is the interesting thing. This is why I say that the our system isn't breaking just yet, and we've got a long, still, you know, a few more years to go before it really breaks. So the premise there is that we're going to now, or the negotiations are that we're also going to import the working force in order to build. You know, so if we sort of break this down a little bit, I mean, my maths isn't the best, Martin, but my understanding is that if you're going to build a million, if you're going to build 1 million homes, right, and it's going to cost $500 billion, right? Does that mean that they're worth, that each dwelling is worth what, 5 million? You know, I mean, it's I couldn't calculate it on my own phone quick enough before the rain. So, you know, it's horrendous. It really, really is. I mean, the now. I know that the Indian population over in the UAE make up the majority of the population there at the moment. Most of the developers in the UAE are actually you know, from Indian heritage, and there's a lot of work happening in UAE, and there's a lot of progress. I mean, there's something like 187,000 transactions, property transactions, new property transactions happened over the last 12 months in the UAE. I mean, it's going gangbusters. And interestingly enough, Martin, that did you know that Australia are in the top 10% investors in the UAE with regards to buying property? I didn't know that. I was gobsmacked. I only found that today. That Australians buying property in the UAE are in the top 10. Go figure. Is it because everybody wants to get out of Australia and they want to go abroad? But look, there's a lot happening there, but understandably, as much as I say that the crews, the developers make up a big portion of developers in the UAE, but it's not so much that the developers are obviously wanting to come over here to build, but to bring the crews, and then we have to train the crews. And is it any one? Then you start sort of putting two, you sort of start putting one and one together, and you start realizing as to why the minister wanted to, wants to put a, put a pause on the National Construction Code. I mean, this is really, bizarre stuff. I mean, I might sound a little bit conspiratorial, but shit, like it's scary if, if we can't build high-rise development, haven't been able to build adequately, or there's only a handful of builders, developers that are still standing that that can build high-rise, but yet we're going to be importing how many in order to build the million dwellings? How many crews are going to be bringing and to train them? So then, okay, on the best case scenario, again, we go back to my calculations is that even if they came over tomorrow, we're still 7 to 10 years away before anybody gets a key. So, but in the meantime, where are all these workers going to be housed? Who's going to train them? How are they going to be trained?
Well, they'll have to come and build their own properties first, won't they? So they've got somewhere to live. It's a bit recursive, it seems to me. And look, the bottom line, of course, is that this is another example of, we don't know whether it's true or whether it's going to develop the way that it's being suggested. But the bottom line is that if you really believe that the answer of solving the situation in Australia is to actually build more high rise quicker, and reducing the building codes and reducing the planning regs to do it, and bringing in a lot of people from overseas who will need to be trained into the rules and regs in Australia is going to be a way to solve the problem. I've got a bridge to sell you open.
Yeah, well, look, if you really wanted to, if you really wanted to make an impact, right? This look, if I was a politician, and I was in power, and I had control of, who I was going to bring in to build the million homes. So, look, I'd be splitting it across the board. Look, I'd say, look, we're going to bring in a quarter of the people are going to be from, Lebanon, because they can bring anything from out the ground. I mean, they're the greatest crews that you can buy, you can get to come out of the ground, right? To get up to the transfer slab, so they can build, dig and do all the concrete and all the basements, and hand it over to, and then you hand it over to to the Italians, because you don't want to render, you want a brick face. So that hides all the imperfections later on. So you want to bring in the Italian crews and Italians and Irish crews. That would be the next, the other 25%, because they're the best bricklayers going around. And then you bring in the Portuguese and the Maltese to do all the internal rendering, and then anybody else in between to do the finishes. Look, I would still bring, I would still. Incorporate the Indians, but that'd be mainly architects and engineers. So, I wouldn't be handing them any tools, but I met some brilliant engineers amongst them. So that's how you'd split up. You'd split up, but I don't know who they're going to bring because most of the crews in the UN, my understanding from what I was just told today, is they're not Indian. The working crews are not Indian. So there's a lot of engineers, a lot of developers, a lot of builders, but not builders that that walk around with a tool belt, with a hammer and chisel. They're basically directing the traffic, as we say. So I don't know, but and where are they gonna be built? Where are they going to be building these million? And all of a sudden, it's negotiations to bring them to build them all at once. I mean, it is going to be so you're going to be pulling away any local crews because obviously they'll prioritize anything that the government's building, which is why we've lost a lot of the working crews presently anyway, because of a lot of the state works and federal works that are going on. And so, you can whistle Dixie if you want to get a renovation done, or an extension done to your property. You're going to be paying a hell of a lot more. It's all these other moving parts that they really haven't considered, because again, it's just ad hoc measures. They talk about, the announceables of cutting this and cutting that and doing this or doing that, but at the end of the day, it's just cheap talk to win the votes. Hence the reason, like I said, the unfortunate thing, Martin, is as much as those the demonstrations, those show of force across Australia was over the weekend, it's going to fall on deaf ears because the current government and the opposition are uninterested to talk about immigration and what they believe we need with regards to importing a working force. They're But what's going to be the vote winners, in my opinion, for the next election is the party, and the only party that talks about it, they talk about it, they don't do it, is to do with CGT and the and negative gearing. But even that, it'll be a diluted version. But I believe that's going to be the vote winner because anything to do with immigration from present. The present opposition, that they themselves don't want to hear about it anyway, or talk about it, or address it. We're here for another. The unfortunate thing is that we're here for another. I can see another. Anywhere between 5 to 7 years of future capital property value growth across many city regions.
Absolutely. And just on the migration, I made a show the other day called Migration Replacement and Statistical BS. And if people want to understand more about that, of course, the ABS complained that people were using their arrival and departure data to be interpreted for migration statistic purposes, despite the fact the government had previously said that that was a good short-term indicator of future trends. And I went on to highlight the fact that there are various papers out there talking about the need to use migration to enable the economy to grow as people aged. And of course, that's got subverted into the Great Replacement, which is a bit of a right-wing story about what's going on. So there's a lot of bigger picture issues. And if people want to know more about that, check out the show. But my point there is that there is a bigger picture, which we've got to come back to, right? Which is about, why is the migration lever being pulled so hard? What are they trying to achieve by doing this? And the answer is they're trying to maintain the GDP. They're trying to actually stop the economy going to recession. They have basically said, well, we're going to dial back migration, but the latest statistics said probably not. So the real question I have, and it's, you can't square the circle, that the story about housing and migration are linked. And yet the government over the weekend tried to de-link them again. The most recent statements from those in, Claire O'Neill, et cetera, are just not wanting to engage in this at all. And people then sort of tried to turn the discussion and the various events that went over the weekend is in some way anti-Australian. No, there's a really important question here, which is how can we square the circle between the migration objectives that this government has and the housing and lifestyle objectives that ordinary Australians have? And the answer is you can't join the two.
No, you can't. And whilst you've got the Uni Party leading us, we're not going to change it. This is what I'm saying. Now, the unfortunate thing, the bad news, folks, is that things aren't going to change for another 5 to 7 years. And you better tighten your belt. You better tighten your belt, and you better I mean, can I say it? I'm going to say it anyway. You better start offloading some of your crypto in order to, if you're thinking about getting into housing, because shit isn't going to get any cheaper unless you want to go and live in Melbourne. choose your poison. Sell the crypto or go and buy a property in Melbourne. But the question moving forward is, and that's always looming is how many other states are going to turn into the similar fiasco that we've got in Melbourne with regards to with the land taxes, all sorts of taxes and all sorts of conditions. Like I said, a lot of the changes that have happened across Australia with regards to the Residential Tenancies Act across all states, a lot of it's very, very good because a lot of investors and a lot of landlords were basically dragging the chain and getting the properties fixed. But the unfortunate thing is when you just throw it out there and you see what you just go all out without any controls or with it or with a more of a socialist agenda than trying to fix a problem, and this is what you have. So the desirable areas, and this is why we look at the numbers, the desirable areas in the regions that we look at, the numbers have been relatively low across the board, except building blocks, because nobody wants to build.
Spot on. And just talking about different areas, one of the things I observe, Edwin, is that things are changing and continue to change. But I thought this was a really interesting article that highlighted the fact that negative gearing on short stay rentals costs Australia up to $556 million a year, according to a report. About 170,000 homes are estimated to be operating as short-term accommodation, which can still claim tax breaks. And this is another example, to my mind, where you have the situation where the tax system is actually rewarding behavior, which, if you look at it as a purely commercial, it's running a business, et cetera, maybe. But if you look at it in the overall round of housing and how you actually house people, then you've got to ask some hard questions about whether this particular approach makes any sense at all. And that's the problem, really. There are levers that could be pulled. You could change some of the negative gearing and other tax breaks to bring the property market into a different realm. You could actually reduce the incentives for property investors a little bit to rebalance. But of course, there is absolutely no appetite to do that, because what they're trying to do is to continue the upward climb of property prices, and for the reasons we've discussed, we expect that to continue at the moment. And the bottom line, therefore, is that house prices are going to continue to rise in a seller's market as new property listings, according to this article from the ABC, are below average, and that's really the bottom line. So yes, hunker down, folks. Expect prices to go higher.
Yeah, and we've been talking about the different regions where in the type of properties that are available for sale, and not available, and what people are being offloading. Look, with regards to the short-term accommodation, I think one of the levelers that's going to have a big, it's already having big effect, and we sort of broke it first. We were talking about it months ago. More than 3 months ago, when we started talking about our predictions with regards to what would happen with the when the Residential Tenancy Act was going to come into force in New South Wales, and how that was going to affect the touristy areas where you've got a lot of these short-term accommodation rentals, where they for a period of time you've got short-term accommodation. They use it for short-term accommodation in the peak seasons and get five, six times more than what they would as a normal rental through a fixed term lease, whether it be 6 months or 9 months, and then they kick the tenant out. But with the changes to the Residential Tenancies Act, where you can't do that anymore, and if you do kick a tenant out with on a no grounds, then the property is sidelined for 12 months, and you can't rent it out. Otherwise, you're penalised. You get a hefty fine. Well, that's meant that in a lot of parts of Sydney, in the Sydney region, as well as the mountains and the touristy areas. We've seen a huge rise in listings and in some areas, like the touristy areas of Sydney. We've actually seen properties sell for or just a little bit above what they were bought in 2021 because of the residential tenancy regulation changes that happen, and people can't afford to keep those anymore because it doesn't make sense anymore based on the prices that they paid, based on the rents they're getting, based on what they were using it for. So it doesn't suit them anymore. So there are some regions that have the numbers have doubled, if not tripled, in some suburbs. And I'm talking about the tourist areas. I mentioned before when we broke the news as to where or we brought up about the prediction, and I said, where my family owned property in the South Coast, that was going to be had already started to be affected and continued to be affected. And that is one of the regions that will continue to be affected. And you see a big rising numbers like mountains and beyond, where you've got your tourist regions. And in between these areas, prices continue to go up. Why? Because they are under the normal market. They are under the normal tenancy scenarios that will continue to be. And also because a lot of the areas in between were at a much lower price point than the tourist areas anyway. So there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. And for those that are looking for property in the eastern suburbs, back then, 3 months ago, I said that some of the eastern, the beach areas or along the water will be affected. I mean, the ones that have been affected, that I've seen a bit of a change. And as I talk to agents, that deal with properties in the eastern suburbs or in the northern beaches in your older style apartment type of dwellings, they've got a bit more on their books than what they had before for the same reason, because they can't now chop and change tenancies because of the new regulations. So look, there's a little bit of light at the end of that tunnel, and in a way, that's a positive effect on the to stop people basically land banking, call it whatever you want to call it, hoarding these type of properties. It's not a big win, but it's a win nevertheless.
Absolutely. Well, of course, legislation and change in legislation does have an impact on where people buy and therefore what property prices could well be. Let's just move on to look at the numbers, Edwin. So in Sydney, on the 25th, according to the Domain definition of the Sydney region, there were 20,353 properties listed for sale in the Sydney region. And if we jump forward to the 1st of September, 20,591. And you can see that tracking in terms of the chart here that shows that listings compared to last year are still a little bit up. But as always, we say, be careful about looking at the numbers without understanding the mix of property that's available. There's still a lot of older property, a lot of lemons that are still on the market and they're not moving. And there are a small number of properties coming on the market and getting gobbled up quite quickly. So it's a story of two markets, I think, in terms of that timing. Looking at Melbourne on the 25th, 25,345. A week later, 25,730. So a little bit of a rise again. And again, mostly houses in the Melbourne region. In Brisbane, 3,206 on the 25th, 3,132 the week later. So slightly down. And the auctions, well, a little bit up. But I think it's fascinating. If you go back to your normal chart here, when we are still seeing the auctions running below where they were last year, and I think that's still a very significant indicator.
Yeah, as I said, there's a lot of there's real no confidence. I've been in the last 3 weeks, I've been to two seminars, of which they've had auctioneers trying to promote the selling agents to to go by way of auction, because obviously it's an industry in itself. But yeah, look, it is rather interesting. And also the latest mainstream media news that's happened over the last month or so obviously puts more of a damper on that. And we're pretty much starting to prepare for the spring selling season, and those numbers are not going up. So it's a confidence level, Martin. It's really a confidence level. Because obviously we still got to navigate and traverse, break the next ceiling of property prices before people have more confidence in going out there. I mean, a lot of people are getting promised the world, and spending a hell of a lot of money in the marketing campaigns, and the delivery is very, very, very dismal. So that's why I say, so if you're going to get pushed into something, if you're going to get put as a seller, or if you're going to get pushed into something, if the selling agent doesn't have skin in the game, well, they're not really the selling agent that you should be adopting. And if you want to navigate those, I mean, that's part one of the roles that we play in our business, is we help people manage the sales process. We don't take carriage of the sale ourselves, but we help people manage, as property consultants, the sales process, and achieve a much better price working alongside of you, because we understand the process. That's one of the things that we look for when we're selecting a selling agent in a particular suburb in Sydney that is going to represent the client that's contracted us to help them manage the process of the sale of the property. For us, it's very simple. What's in it for us? What's in it for our client to use you? How much skin are you going to put in the game in order to take carriage of the sale? And what is going to be your the yeah, and we also obviously gauge the performance, and there's the certain incentives and disincentives as well. So but the confidence is definitely not there, and auctioneers are certainly out there trying to ramp up business, because the numbers are running at about 62% what they were last year.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, again, my surveys, I've done some statistical analysis of particularly down traders and up traders. So down traders are people looking to find somewhere a bit smaller to move to. There's a lot of people who want to down trade, but they just can't find anything suitable. You've got some up traders, not quite as many, but quite a few up traders who are interested in buying a larger property. But again, they can't find property that actually fits their needs. So what I'm seeing is that there's a lot of stagnation amongst those two big groups. And there's 1.2 million down traders and about 800,000 up traders who are actively thinking about doing something. But only about a third of them are finding anything in the way of property that might actually be of any use to them in terms of making a decision. So there's a huge stasis there, a massive amount of stasis. And I think so it's part uncertainty, but also just part the wrong property supply not coming on the market. And then you've got the first-time buyers. And again, in my surveys, I am seeing first-time buyers beginning to be a little bit more alert, because the interest rates have come down a little, and of course the new scheme is coming in, but the prices are still being chased higher, particularly if the first-time buyers. So they are not actually that keen either. So it is a really interesting time, and I think that explains some of the dynamics we're seeing. And in fact, if you look at the price trackers, you can see here that prices in the median prices for Sydney slid a little bit, and a little bit of movement up the other side. But if you look back over the last few months, things really, well, they've gone more sideways than anything else. And so when you actually hear about these overall statistical data sets that say prices are up X, Y, or Z, well, depends how you look at it.
These are the median changes, week by week changes of basically the median as to the average property sales on freestanding homes and apartments across Sydney and Melbourne on a Saturday over the auction over the Saturday. So yeah, it's rather interesting that you've got this. When I look at these graphs, mate, I look at the emotion. You look at the two times that. The two times the points in the Sydney market where the homes cracked the 2 million, and what happened around those weeks. And then you look at what seems to be steady and consistent are the apartment market that just keeps on going, sort of flatlined. But in terms of freestanding homes, the chart just speaks volumes. With emotion, a lot of it, because obviously these figures are from the weekend auctions, auction results.
Absolutely, and that's really the point, isn't it? It shows you that there's a strong connection between, people's attitudes, appetite to get in, auction story, and the fact that agents are still pushing auctions as the way to sell property when maybe sometimes it's not the best method at all. Just on the rentals quickly, in Sydney on the 25th, 10,579. A week later, 10,301, so a further fall there. In Melbourne, 11,408 on the 25th, 11,199 a week later. And so again, we are seeing low supply. No surprise then that we're still seeing further climbs in the rentals. And once again, the data on what's going on with rentals is a bit obscured. But certainly, all the analysis that we're seeing suggests that people in the rental sector are still under pressure. And in fact, my latest mortgage stress data, which I've just run, has shown a bit of an increase in financial stress for some cohorts, despite the fact that the rate cuts have actually come in a little. So a lot of people are still spending a lot of their income, 50% or more, on either a mortgage or a rent. And that's part of the problem for people. It's just a huge, huge commitment. Now, as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, your thought for the week, and this is a very interesting one.
Yeah, look, my thought for the week is jump on the opportunity. Success comes when opportunity meets preparation. One of the reasons why I'm in Kangaroo Valley at the moment is because of one of those opportunities, and which I've been preparing for the last 5 years. And well, a little bit more than 5 years, but let's say 5 years where negotiations started 4 or 5 years ago. And I'll share a little bit more about it in the next Monday evening property rant, with a little bit more liberty. And look, as an old mentor, a business mentor of mine used to say, there's an opportunity going past you every day. You just have to be open-eyed or awake, and be prepared in order to grab it. And if we don't see it, it's generally because of all the noise. The emotional noise and all sorts of noise around us that just blinds us to look at that opportunity. So, for all our viewers and followers out there that have been looking at having a business change, making a move, buying into an opportunity, or anything for that matter, buying Bitcoin. No, no. If the opportunity is there, grab it. And you'll know one of the things, Martin, that I've had for a while now is intuitively it can be a little bit daunting, can be a little bit scary, but intuitively you've made the right decision. So and I think that's your mind and your inner being, inner person telling you that, hold on a minute, we've been preparing for this, let's grab the opportunity. Look, as I said, for us, for myself and my team, it's a big jump. It was a big leap of faith, and I'll be sharing a little bit more about it next week. So I want to encourage everybody else out there. And hey, you're never too young and you're never too old to take on a new adventure as well.
Yeah, and I think let's talk about signal and noise just a little bit. One of my other interests, I'm a ham radio operator as well, and I'm very interested in signal versus noise. And there's a thing called a discriminator that basically you tune it to tune out the noise to pull the weak signal that is there. And I think that more broadly in life, we are surrounded by massive amounts of noise, whether it's social media noise, whether it's the family, whatever it is, right? So sometimes it's really important to trim that discriminator to separate out the signal from the noise, because amongst all of the noise, that signal could be really, really important. It could be a new opportunity. It could be a new thing that you could explore. And so I'm a great believer in discrimination and tuning and getting the noise out the way so you can see the real opportunities. And, you know, as you often say, you know, there is opportunity around the corner if you know where to look. But hopefully those people who follow us on the channel here, Edwin, have a stronger, more tuned discriminator, so they're more able to find the signal from the noise.
Yeah, and hopefully you can send one of your radios to Albo & Co, and maybe they could use it a little bit more regularly.
Yeah, I think it should be a very large one because they've got a lot of noise and few signals at the moment. Edwin, thank you very much. I look forward to hearing more about your announcements and things next week. Hope you have a good conference, and we'll catch you then.
All the best, Martin. You take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.